BBC Education. Radio History, 11 to 14. All the programmes in this unit are designed to be used with an accompanying booklet. It can be obtained by sending a 50 pence cheque made payable to BBC Publications from Radio History, the BBC School Radio, 1 Portland Place, London, W1A, 1AA. We begin with The Bloody Hand by Chris Jordan.
September the 1st, 1892. A large fire glows in the study at 221B Baker Street, the room is occupied by Mr. Sherlock Holmes. Holmes is about to help another young lady in distress.
Good evening, miss.
Williams. I'm Williams. I would like you to investigate a case for me, Mr. Holmes. I'm prepared to pay well once I've married.
Describe your case to me, Miss Williams.
I'm engaged to be married to Sir Edward Stanhope, the well-known lawyer and author. Oh, there is much that need not concern you. Only that my final chance for happiness should come next month. However, my fiancé has delayed our wedding on account of this dreadful notice, which his clerk found amongst some legal papers. It is, as you see, a newspaper account of the public execution of a man in Oldham over 60 years ago. That man, Bert Williams, was my grandfather, Miss Downs.
It says here that Bert Williams was found guilty of murdering Ezekiel Robinson, a weaver employed at Harrington's Mill near Oldham. Robinson had surprised Williams in the engine shed of Harrington's Mill on the night of October the 4th. Williams, a well-known agitator and radical, is thought to have been trying to wreck the new steam engine in the mill and killed Robinson to prevent discovery. Williams was apprehended on October the 6th, sent to trial and executed on December the 6th, still claiming that he was innocent.
And my father has sent me some letters and papers written by my grandfather and others. If you read them, Mr. Holmes, they may give you a lead.
Ah, but my dear Miss Williams, you must realise that we are detectives and need to question witnesses and work in the prison.
Quite so, Watson. But I feel there may be fruit on this withered vine. This collection of documents really is remarkably full. We have here reports of the trial, letters from prison, character references, and, yes, a copy of the doctor's report. Now, let me see. Listen to this, Watson.
The victim had been dead for only a short time when I arrived at the mill. The body was lying directly under the engine, with signs of considerable violence covering the face and upper regions. I have no doubt that considerable violence was used in dispatching the helpless victim, who could have offered little resistance against his attacker because of his general infirmities, notably a withered leg.
From the description of the terrible beating the poor fellow received, I'd say he died from traumatic shock. Heart just gave out. Heaven's off.
Do you know anything about your grandfather's size and strength, Miss Williams?
Only that he was an extremely large, powerful man, Mr. Holmes. My father told me that he needed special large chairs because of his size. There's a horrid letter there which says he was violent, but my father denies this. Oh, what a mess.
Calm yourself, Miss Williams. Now, let me see, what is this wretched letter? Ah, yes, here it is. Written after the trial to your father from Sir Edwin Cruikshank, J.P. M.P.
Sir, I have in receipt of your letter requesting me to ask for a royal pardon for your father. I must say, I find your impertinence shocking, to say the least. You will know that Williams appeared before me on no fewer than 4 occasions, charged with violent conduct, breach of the peace, and incitement to riot. Unfortunately, he managed to wriggle free by using fine words and claiming lack of evidence. He seems to me to be the essence of evil, a drunken, violent madman who organized his cronies into that worst of all political evils, the mob, to ravage, smash, and otherwise abuse the manufacturing industries of this fair country. May God have mercy on his soul.
I say, that's laying it on a bit thick, isn't it?
Now, let me get this straight, Miss Williams. Your fiancé will only consent to marry you if I can prove that your grandfather was innocent?
Well, just the indication of doubt will be enough, Mr. Holmes.
Come, Watson. We leave for Oldham right away.
That was an excellent dinner, Watson. Now, let us proceed with our investigation. Lay out the local map. Now, we are here in the Porrington Arms. The main road to Oldham is to the east, and to the west, the road leads into a small single track which winds its way onto the Harrington Estate and eventually into the cotton mill.
Yes.
It's a fair distance. The countryside between here and the mill looks pretty wild to me. Heather, moors, rocky outcrops. Interesting, eh?
If you say so, Holmes. I must say I find this industrial landscape rather demoralizing. I have some sympathy for old Williams wanting to smash these mill places.
Ah, that should be our hostess. Admit her at once, Watson.
Good evening, gents. I hope you enjoyed your meal.
Well, how long have you lived here, Mrs. Brown?
All my life, sir. Over 50 years in the same house. My parents owned the inn before me.
Do you recall hearing anything about the murder that happened up at Harrington's Mill 62 years ago?
God love us, I knows about it, sir. It's about the only thing that ever happened here. I knew young Celia Robinson, and my mother told me how her poor father were done in all them years ago. I felt sorry for Celia. Her family didn't get much sympathy even after the old man was gone. Of course, there were a lot of people who would like to have finished him off. My mother said how he used to limp about looking miserable all the time, stirring up trouble, trying to sponge off other workers, telling tales and preaching all the time. He never had 2 pennies to rub together, but he managed to feed himself all right. Proper boss's man, running errands and poking his nose in.
Thank you, Mrs. Brown, most helpful. Now, I wonder, is there anyone who could show us round Harrington's Mill in the morning? I understand that the place is deserted now.
Oh, that's right, sir. Young Mr. Harrington, he bought a steamship and set off for America. I'll get Albert Harry to show you round. He worked at mill as a nipper. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must retire. Good night to you both.
Well, what do you make of that, Holmes? She knows the people round here. Seems Williams chose the right man to murder.
Let me think. Hand me those papers. Where is it? Yes, here. Report on the deceased. The only articles found on the body were a pocket Bible, a hymn sheet, a gold watch and chain. Now, that's very interesting. I wonder where he came by that. I wonder. I must sleep on it.
Righto, Holmes. I must confess we seem to be no nearer the truth. Good night, old man.
A real boss's man. Yes. Yes, good night, Watson.
So, this is the main entrance to the mill, Mr. Harry?
Oh, sir. Tom Woods, you come through these doors and be deafened by the noise. The loom's clattering away, the steam whistle's blowing, the engine pumping away. At the time of the murder, we were right in the middle of a big order, working double shifts of 16 hours for days. Mr. Harrington were that mad when we had to shut down for a week to repair the engine following the murder.
Is there only one set of doors leading into the weaving shed?
Oh, sir, that door in centre led to Mr. Harrington's office. The door at the other end led to engine shed. And I think there were a small door from engine shed to outside yard.
Yes, I see. And could any workers leave the main weaving shed?
Oh, no, sir.
Well, that seems to be all for now. Ready, Watson?
Yes, my dear fellow. All this cotton talk seems to put my head in a spin. Ha, ha. I say, Holmes, a joke, is
it? It's enough, Watson. We need to visit a solicitor in Oldham, then we should be ready to solve the case.
What do we need a solicitor for, Holmes? Not going to break in anywhere, are
we? No, Watson. But the letters indicate that this firm represented Williams in 1830 and kept a full record of the trial. Come. No time to waste. The solicitors, and then back to the Porrington Arms.
I'd say, Holmes, it was damn decent of that solicitor chappy to look out all his own papers. It's fascinating. Almost like actually being there.
Now then, Watson, you have the notes written by the solicitor, and I have the statements given by each witness. So, let us recreate some of the trial of Bert Williams. Let us start with the evidence from Williams himself.
I will say no more. God is my witness and knows the truth. Curse you all. Not much of a bear, eh, Holmes? How about the next witness, John Fletcher? This is what the solicitor says about him. John Fletcher, engineman at Harrington's. Respectable, honest, straight-talking man. Knows his trade, eager to get on.
Well, let's hear Mr. Fletcher's story.
I were on duty, stoking the engine as usual. Mr. Harrington sent over a message asking for more steam about 9 o'clock. Well, I'd been on since early afternoon, and this was the third time I'd had to increase the pressure. About an hour later, I needed to check the coal supplies for that morning shift. I went out through my back door and made my way over to the other side of the yard. I'd been gone a few minutes when I heard a real commotion coming from the engine shed. I rushed back just in time to see someone hurrying across by the side of the engine shed. It were a big man, with a limp carrying a stick. I had to check the engine so I didn't try to stop him. I walked into the engine room and saw steam escaping from all the valves. The driving belt was broken and several shafts had worked loose. Directly under the engine were poor Zeke, covered in blood.
Did you recognise the figure in the yard as Mr. Williams?
Well, I can't say as I did, sir, but Mr. Harrington told me it must be Williams as soon as I described the figure to him.
Is it true that Mr. Robinson was a friend of yours?
Oh, not exactly. We were fellow worshippers for a time. I were a happy member of the Bethel Brethren, and so was Mr. Robinson, until he found another place to worship. Some money had gone missing from our collection plate, and Mr. Robinson objected to a search of the congregation. So he left.
Things still look bad for Williams. Now, next witness, James Harrington, self-made man, very wealthy, impressive manager, very overbearing and difficult to get on with, masterful, unfriendly, and a powerful man.
Can you describe the events of the late evening of October the 4th for the court, Mr. Harrington?
Aye, but not with pleasure. We'd had some trouble with the operatives, reporting late, slack work and so on. So, I had to supervise all the work myself. I was in my office, doing the accounts and letters, when suddenly everything seemed to be slowing down. Check my watch. 10:05. I was absolutely mad, I can tell you. I grabbed my stick, rushed out of the side door, round the side of the mill, into the yard and across into the engine shed. Now, there was a real commotion going on in there. I saw Robinson lying on the floor in a corner and took command of the situation. I found out from Fletcher that fool Williams had killed Robinson, so determined to apprehend the villain at once. So, I gathered some men together, took out my carriage and went searching. We found him, drunk, in the upstairs room with the Porrington Arms, and took him to the county jail.
Can you be sure that Williams was the man who killed Robinson?
From Fletcher's description of the shadowy figure, and knowing Williams' frame of mind, it was him that did it, no doubt in my mind.
Several people have reported that you often used to speak to Robinson and call him into your office.
I may have felt sorry for Robinson and tried to slip him a few extra coins for running errands. He was a useful worker. Did as he was told. None of this union nonsense. Williams himself had been a good worker before he joined a union. Let's say that Robinson could act as my eyes and ears in certain matters.
Who next, Holmes? There weren't many more witnesses. A few of Williams' friends had been drinking with him. A few workers. The local parson.
Let's hear from Sally Little, who was serving drinks at the Porrington Arms.
Bert Williams had paid 1 shilling to hire our upstairs room for the evening, and I had to take up the drinks. He had about 12 men there.
At what time did Mr. Williams finish the meeting?
At about 9, I went up to tell them to finish, and walked into a blazing row. Mr. Williams was drunk and yelling about the infernal mills. It took quite a time to calm him down. Then everybody left, except Mr. Williams, who asked if he could stay upstairs for a bit. I let him, poor soul. He was in such a state. I went downstairs and carried on serving. There's some back stairs outside of the upstairs room, and I fancy I heard the door bang after about 10 minutes. But I forgot about Mr. Williams. Until just after 11, when Mr. Harrington and his men rushed in yelling and shouting. Anyway, they rushed upstairs and come back down again with poor Mr. Williams, looking very frightened.
Right, that's it, Watson. I think Miss Williams can sleep easily tonight. Now, to bed, Watson. Then in the morning you can give me your conclusions at the mill itself.
The conclusions, Holmes? Ah, yes, yes, of course. Curious crystal. Good night, old man.
The scene of the crime, the engine shed. Now tell me, what conclusions have you reached?
Well, I'm afraid I think the verdict was right, Holmes. Williams had been sacked by Harrington and was obviously determined to wreck the mill. He was a man of violent temper and couldn't stand Robinson. He made his way to the mill, lay in wait for Robinson, killed him, wrecked the place, and made his escape through that door where he was seen by Fletcher.
Yes, but there are flaws in your argument, Watson. In the first place, how did Williams know that Robinson was going to be in the engine shed at that time? Most importantly, consider the circumstances of the crime. We know that Robinson was killed at 10 p.m. and that Williams was apprehended just before 11 p.m. We know that Williams was drunk, had a pronounced limp, and the distance from the Porrington Arms to the mill is about 6 miles. Now, there's no way that Williams could have walked to the mill, committed the murder, and got back in time. But considering his circumstances in jail, he knew that execution was his final chance of glory. He was ill, old, and had no future. So he chose death and glory by refusing to defend himself.
You're right, Holmes. If you start thinking that Williams was innocent, the evidence looks completely different. After all, no one saw him, except Fletcher. Did he imagine that? Yes, Fletcher killed Robinson. He disliked him for stealing money from the church, then made up the story. Brilliant, Holmes.
I think not, Watson. You're right that Fletcher had the motive. He'd worked out that Robinson had taken money from his church and, no doubt, bought a gold watch and chain. But the circumstances of the crime are all wrong. Fletcher was the only man in the engine shed, so why kill Robinson there? And why wreck the engine, which was his livelihood and sole source of support? No, I don't see Fletcher as that sort of man. More likely, he'd left the engine unattended, gone off for a smoke and a rest, and panicked when he realized that questions would be asked and invented the large shadowy figure so that people forgot he was not at his post.
Yes, I agree, Holmes. So, it must have been Harrington, of course. Perhaps Robinson knew too much and had to be silenced. A devious plot. Harrington walked all round the mill, did in Robinson, then ran back to his office.
No, Watson. Harrington had plenty of chances to silence Robinson without killing him. He was the J.P. after all and could not be rattled by a worm like Robinson. And how did he know Fletcher was absent? And why kill Robinson in the engine shed and wreck his own mill? No. He was obsessed with profit and jumped to the wrong conclusion on hearing Fletcher's description.
But who does that leave, Holmes? The barmaid? The parson? Some passing stranger?
No, Watson. I believe our criminal is here now. Remember the doctor's report. Robinson's main injuries were caused by steam and machine parts from the engine itself. No major injuries to internal organs, no skull bashed in by a blunt instrument. But remember, the body had been moved when the doctor examined it, so he missed the obvious. Eliminate the impossible. We know that no one else could have been in the engine shed at the time, that Robinson was an interfering, nosy man who couldn't resist tampering and looking for an opportunity to be useful. Therefore, there was no human criminal. But all the major witnesses were determined to hang the crime round the neck of poor Williams.
Oh, an accident then, Holmes. A terrible accident caused by
what, Watson? I think we know, but it can only be supposition. Come, let us return to London and spin our tale to the eminent Sir Edward Stirrup.
Oh, very good, Holmes, you make a comedian yet. Huh? Well done, old chap.
The Bloody Hand was produced by Elizabeth Cleaver.